Should teachers carry guns? Should we change the Second Amendment? Why does such a high level of gun violence exist in America and not in the rest of the world? Members of Bloomington Students Against Assault Weapons are pressing for answers to these questions and more in a quest for solutions to gun violence.
Gun violence is something that hits the underrepresented corners of society the most. We recognize our privilege.
The group led a town hall last Saturday. They invited state and congressional representatives and candidates to dialogue on gun violence.
We know that this issue runs deeper and wider than just guns, than a mental health issue about bullying. In this day and age, money talks. And it talks so loudly that our elected officials can no longer hear the cries of moviegoers, of concertgoers, of worshipers, of 20 first graders, 17 high schoolers, 32 Virginia Tech Hokies, the 150,000 American students that have had to endure a school shooting, and the countless minorities that face the threat of violence right outside their front door every day. The cash is so loud that we have become easy to ignore.
That's Sarah Hannon opening the town hall discussion. She's a student at Bloomington High School North and one of the event's organizers. She says social media made the Parkland, Florida school shooting very real and personal. She thinks the issue of gun violence is part of her generation's coming of age.
I definitely feel like I am coming to an age where I can make a difference. I'm allowed to vote in this next election, and in 7 years I can run for representative, and a few years after that I can run for senator. But I think it's definitely important to show that we're the future and we need to be taken seriously.
Dozens of people gathered at the First United Church in East Bloomington for the town hall. The panelists consisted of 8 Democrats. Republican representatives were invited but did not attend. Here's a sampling of the night's dialogue. In this excerpt, you'll hear Bloomington High School North students Tamara Brown and Ruth Nall, along with State Representative Matt Pierce and 9th Congressional District candidate Liz Watson.
I would like to look to inner cities such as Indianapolis or Chicago, where they have passed more intense, restrictive gun legislation in an effort to slow down gun violence. But when you have something like the state of Indiana, where a background check policy is extremely minuscule, there comes a break within that system. So we're looking at this from a very federal point of view. How can we protect citizens further? Ruth?
Our question is, as our society advances in technology, firearms are also advancing in capacity and availability. Do you think that the Second Amendment should be revised, and how?
The NRA has really been on this huge propaganda campaign to say that the Second Amendment prevents states from actually adopting common sense gun safety. The truth is, the Second Amendment is not really the problem. If you look at the court cases and the big decision of Heller, which said that you could have guns for personal protection, it's not just about maintaining a militia, the court never said that prevented states or Congress from passing provisions to try to limit the downsides of weapons, whether it's banning certain types of weapons or having more thorough background checks or other kinds of things. So I think that, as policymakers, we just need to pass the policies that we think make sense. Of course, we'll all get sued over them no matter what we do, and then the courts will tell us. But I think if you look at the court cases that actually come down, the Second Amendment is really not as big of a barrier to having common sense gun legislation as people would want you to think. So in that case, I think there's lots of stuff you could do very quickly that we've talked about. You know, closing the gun show loopholes, really making sure everyone has a background check, making sure that all these different agencies, federal and state, are actually sharing information about people who should not have access to weapons. And I think we have to have a discussion about what level of firepower is it really necessary for an individual to have to either hunt or to protect themselves.
So I think that we can respect the Second Amendment and we can respect the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness at the same time. I think just yesterday, actually, a court weighed in on the issue of whether an assault weapons ban in Massachusetts violated the Second Amendment. And the court said no. And the court quoted Scalia on this point, that the Second Amendment does not restrict our ability to enact common sense gun reforms, Scalia being our most conservative justice.
Another student asked about controlling handgun violence. 9th Congressional District candidates Rob Chatlos and Dan Cannon were among those who responded.
Hi, I'm Abby. My question is, some people favor an assault weapon ban, but most homicides in the U.S. are committed using handguns. Do you have a separate plan to address handgun violence in America, which also occurs daily?
It gets down to face time, contact between people. there's a relationship that needs to take place when a gun is sold. One of the things that I would like to see happen is a longer wait time for first-time gun buyers, up to 3 months. And during that time is an opportunity to train people for maybe a trainer or instructor to get to know a person, maybe see what their intentions are about. Any time that we can bring people into the equation that can intercept somebody's attitude or intention, that's a real plus.
There was a study of the Israeli army that found that changing the protocol so soldiers had to leave their weapons on base instead of bringing them home for the weekend lowered the suicide rate by 40%. That is a big number when we're talking about suicide numbers. Put distance between people and weapons, right? You know, basically put distance between people and weapons when they are wanting to buy them, but more importantly, when they have them at home, right? So, you know, creating regulations that require people to have their weapons secured, require them to put trigger lock mechanisms on those weapons. If there's a particular technological thing that you have to do to be able to unlock your gun or to use your gun, then that puts some distance between you and the ability for you to just do an impulse, you know, shooting or impulse suicide.
In her response, State House District 62 candidate Amy Swain called for stronger enforcement of Indiana's Laird Law, also known as the Red Flag Law.
With the Laird Law, if a family member is willing to let the courts know that someone is a danger to themselves or others, they can issue a warrant with probable cause so that the law enforcement officers can take away those weapons that are in the home until the court can decide through due process whether or not that person can be determined to no longer be a threat to themselves or others.
Swain was also among those who advocated for gun permits, background checks, and fingerprinting. Given that a number of mass shootings have been conducted by people with mental illness, the panel was asked for their position on raising taxes in support of mental health services. Here's 9th Congressional District candidate Dan Cannon.
This is a public health emergency, right? Gun violence in the United States is a public health emergency. We have the money in the United States to deal with a public health emergency. Plain and simple. We're the wealthiest country in the history of the world, and we've got the money to take care of it. And I think any rhetoric to the contrary, takes us down a right-wing rabbit hole that we don't need to be in. And we've been playing defense on this for a long time. And since that, you know, okay, so we've shelled out all this money for, to institute common sense gun reform, and that means that we're necessarily going to have an increase in the federal income tax. That's just simply not true. When we talk about military spending, when we talk about hurricane relief and other disaster relief and other public health emergencies, we don't talk about those things in terms of being tied to the income tax or even being tied to the deficit. I think that we're already paying for, you know, the lack of common sense gun legislation that we have in this country. We're already paying for it. It's a good investment, whatever money that we can put directly into these programs at the federal level. And there doesn't need to be an income tax increase tied to that.
In his response, State House District 65 candidate Jared Stancomb said funding the state's Division of Child Services is crucial to providing youth with mental health services.
I spoke to some social workers at the Department of Child Services at an event at a middle school in Bedford, and I heard from the sheriff before in Lawrence County that the average person at DCS doesn't stay for more than 3 months because they get burned out. DCS has been absolutely decimated, and there are no plans from the Indiana State House to fund it properly. I would like to see more money being appropriated to DCS. I mean, that's how we need to solve this problem.
One gentleman in the audience asked the panelists for a pledge.
How many of you will pledge not to accept funds from gun manufacturers or the National Rifle Association?
Every candidate and representative on the panel raised their hand to take the pledge. The panel encouraged the teens to keep up the pressure for common sense gun laws and stay involved in the political process. Event organizer Sarah Hannon says the next event for Bloomington Students Against Assault Weapons is a school walkout on April 20th, the 19th anniversary of the massacre at Columbine High School. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.